This is the follow-up sidebar for episode 10 of Unconcluded, a real-time investigative podcast looking into the 2006 disappearance of Jennifer Kesey. I'm Sean Gerd.
And I'm Scott Jameson.
If you remember, in episode 10, we introduced the possibility of a man who's currently in prison for a brutal attack on another woman and suspected in the disappearance of at least two others being responsible for Jennifer's disappearance. And so we'll get to your comments and questions about him, as well as anything else that may be on your mind. Let's get started.
All right, first up, we have some listener voicemails.
Aloha, guys. My name is Kellen, and I am from Hawaii. And this has to do with James Hathaway. So I am wondering if she ever occasionally would smoke marijuana. I don't see it as taboo. I know in 2006, it may have been more taboo than it is now. To me, it's more of like it equates to coffee or cigarette. At the time, in 2006, I was around the same age as Jennifer. I was also a young professional. I lived on my own. And I occasionally smoked marijuana. And so I was wondering if she did and if that may tie her to James Hathaway and if there may be some kind of tie in regards to like a burner phone, or I'm trying to think of how she could be tied to him in a way in which other people wouldn't have known. So that's my question. Thank you for all you do. Have a good day.
To answer the question first, to the best of our knowledge, based on the people that we've talked to, I'd have to say no. I don't believe that Jennifer was into marijuana or any other drug for that matter. Can I say with 100% certainty that I know for a fact that she wasn't? No, I can't. But we've come across nothing that will lead us to believe it was the case. In addition, I believe that drug tests were administered by law enforcement on her hair, which I assume was from a comb or a brush or something, and it's my understanding that those came back negative. So, back to the point of your question, is there something that can tie Jennifer to James Hathaway? And that's the same question that we've been trying to answer for several months. As I mentioned in the episode, that's the problem with considering him as a suspect, is that connection is what appears to be missing. He has a documented past with drugs, and it's beyond marijuana, to be honest, but I agree with you that if Jennifer had drugs in her system or it was something that she was known to do, that would certainly open up new avenues and new questions that could link the two. But the problem is, I just don't think that's the case. That's just not something that we have in her file, so to speak, and I've never heard a single person or talked to a single person that would even suggest that she would be involved in any kind of drugs at all.
Why was her suitcase not unpacked for several days? And also, was Jennifer Kesey a notary in the state of Florida or anywhere else? I mean, if you could ask maybe her family if she was a notary in the state of Florida.
I'm not sure we can determine for certain why she wouldn't have unpacked her suitcase from a trip to St. Croix, but I can easily speculate because it really just doesn't seem that odd to me. She woke up extremely early Monday morning and drove 3 hours to work. She worked a full day and then came home, and she would have had to carry the luggage upstairs. I can only imagine that by that point she's extremely tired, and the last thing that I'd probably want to do is unpack my suitcase, so it's not a stretch for me to think that that may have been the case for her too. And she could have just planned to take care of it the next day when she would have had more energy, or something along those lines. As for the notary question, I thought I'd already responded to this one on a previous sidebar, but then I couldn't find it, so in case I didn't, I'll respond now. I'm not exactly sure of the point of your question, but I assume maybe you're thinking that someone had set up an appointment to come to her condo or get something notarized. But I don't think it matters, because I don't believe that she was. First, the state of Florida keeps a database of commissioned notaries, along with their expiration dates, and I was able to find notaries who had their expirations prior to 2006. Jennifer is not in the database. In addition, the people that I asked didn't have any knowledge of her being a notary either.
Hi, this is Vanessa. I listen over in the Tampa Bay area. Love the podcast. I've actually been following the Kesey case since the beginning, because I'm a Florida native. I know at one point, and I think it was one of the sidebars, that y'all were discussing that the Crime Stoppers line, people would call in and it was all kinds of random information, this, that, the third, that psychics would call in. But has anybody maybe reached out to an actual psychic, somebody who thinks they're an actual psychic, and asked them for help, maybe? I don't know, instead of having, you know, just random weirdos calling and leaving tips on the hotline.
If you're asking if we've reached out to a psychic, our answer is no, we have not. Now, if you're asking if law enforcement has, I can't answer that. I do know that it's not unheard of for law enforcement agencies to consult with psychics, but I've never seen anything in regards to the Orlando Police Department doing so. But as you mentioned, they've followed up on tips they've gotten from psychics, and one of the prior detectives made a good point, that tips could come in under the guise of being a psychic tip when in reality, it could be anything but. Imagine having information about a crime but not wanting to explain how or why you had that information. Attributing it to psychic powers distances a person from having knowledge of the crime. And it's for this reason that we continue to follow up on the psychic tips we get as well, regardless of personal opinion on psychics as a whole.
Hi, I was wondering if anyone's ever considered the fact that maybe the car and Jennifer's disappearance are completely unrelated. Like maybe somebody just stumbled upon her car keys and took her car and drove it to that apartment. Have they ever searched her coworker's car to see if she was present in the vehicle? Maybe he snatched her or maybe somebody took her or something like that. And her car just also happened to be stolen. Because, you know, she dropped her keys or something of the sort. Thank you. Bye-bye.
There's a lot of possibilities surrounding the person of interest and the car, which range from the person of interest being the actual person that abducted Jennifer to something along the lines of what you mentioned, not having any idea about the crime committed against Jennifer at all. And we can't really rule any of those possibilities out. But remember that the individual was tracked by K-9 walking back to the steps at the bottom of Jennifer's condo after dropping her car off at the Huntington on the Green. In my opinion, this makes it unlikely that it was someone just taking her car for a joyride after finding the keys or something like that. I believe that the person of interest was in fact involved in Jennifer's disappearance or was paid to move the car by the person that was. In either scenario, I believe this person, the person of interest, knows something about Jennifer's actual disappearance. Something that would help us find Jennifer. Today's episode of Unconcluded is sponsored in part by Stamps.com. These days, you can get practically everything on demand. Like this podcast. You listen whenever you want. It's convenient for you. So, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything you can do at the post office, you can do right from your own desk with Stamps.com. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. And unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes, so you can get postage whenever you need it, 24/7. I love Stamps.com because a lot of the work I do for this podcast isn't during traditional hours. It's in nights and weekends when the post office just isn't available. So it's super convenient to be able to just log on to Stamps.com and take care of my postage needs. You can use our podcast name, Unconcluded, for this special offer, a 4-week trial, including postage and a digital scale. So don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do anything else and click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Unconcluded. That's stamps.com. Enter Unconcluded. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again.
Okay, now we'll move on to the emails and social media portion of the show. Jennifer on Facebook wants to know if we have a housing location for James Hathaway that may be close to Huntington on the Green. She compares it to how Tracy Ocasio's car was found next to his residence and wants to know if maybe there's a correlation with Jen's car being found and a James Hathaway residence.
No, we don't. His address history has no locations that could be considered close to either the Huntington on the Green or the Mosaic at Millennia. But I'm glad you brought this up, because in comparing the crimes against Jennifer and against Tracy Ocasio, the car being abandoned is one of the most stated or most brought up similarities. But if you look deeper, like you obviously are, it just doesn't seem as similar as it seems on the surface.
Margaret on Facebook says that it seems odd to her that Sean and Scott are quick to rule out James Hathaway, but seem more credulous with all the potential sightings. Eyewitness testimony is known to be the least reliable. It seems strange to hear you go into such depth based on people's say-so, but dismiss other things as, quote-unquote, it just doesn't strike me as a connection.
First, let me say that we made it clear in the last episode that we could not rule out James Hathaway. But what we did say was that after spending a lot of time looking into it, there wasn't anything that we could find to suggest that he had ever crossed paths with Jennifer, knew her, or could be involved in her disappearance. And that's why we said we were focusing our efforts elsewhere. But again, that doesn't mean he's been cleared by us. Now, for why we seem to spend more time on the various eyewitness accounts, to be honest, I'm not really sure that we do. We've devoted a single episode to each, same as Hathaway. But I will say that these different eyewitnesses are actually claiming to have information about Jennifer's actual disappearance. And some of them are sharing that information or answering questions about it for the first time. There is a lot more to look into than with Hathaway, who's been looked at by law enforcement, questioned for seemingly years, and has no real links to Jennifer. And maybe you're confusing the conversation that we played in the last episode between Scott and I for more than it actually was. It was a conversation that we had had way back before we even really dove into this case. The point of it was that even after spending a month or 2 months looking into it, we didn't have any additional information to go on. In fact, if you really think about it, maybe less, considering some of the speculated connections and coincidences between Hathaway and Jennifer weren't even accurate. So we have not ruled out James Hathaway as a possible suspect in Jennifer's disappearance. However, at this point, there's just not anything else to go on in linking him to her disappearance.
Sydney on Facebook had a poll that she posted about who everyone thought their top suspect was, and it had some pretty interesting results. Over 150 people at the time of this recording had chimed in and given who they thought it was. And Sean, can you fill us in a little bit on the results of that poll?
I think the most interesting part of that poll was how many different answers were given. I think we expected, Scott, that most people would overwhelmingly say that they believed it to be the coworker, because that's where the majority of the discussion has been over the last several years, and even to some extent on the Facebook group. But it seemed to be more spread out. The choices given in the poll were a condo worker, the coworker, James Hathaway, a neighbor, the ex-boyfriend, a human trafficker, or other. And there were some good points made that a condo worker and a human trafficker could actually end up being the same person. And if we added up all the responses, I think that the condo worker or the coworker would have had the most votes, but not by the landslide that I expected. I think this poll just goes to show that there's a lot of possibilities that are still out there and how hard it is to make sense of Jennifer's disappearance. If you didn't get a chance to check that out, I suggest you do so and leave your thoughts as well. It's always interesting to see other viewpoints that are out there besides ours.
Sean, we actually had quite a few more questions about the sweater that was found in Jen's hamper at her condo, and are you ready to put that one to bed yet and say that you don't believe it has anything to do with this case?
Absolutely not. I don't think that I can say that. I'd be hard-pressed for anybody to be able to say that unless the Kessies were able to actually identify whose sweater it was to start with. Now, if you're asking, do I think that it was possibly Jennifer's sweater and it's just something that she used to lay around the house? I think that that is probably likely, but that said, I'm not really just to assume that that's what it is. And I think certainly it would have been nice for law enforcement to take a look at it and see if there was more to it. All these years later, I'm not sure what more can come from it, but No, to answer the question, if I'm ready just to say it's not involved, I think with most things that we have to still consider everything as possible evidence in this case.
Stacy on Facebook asks if there's been a deep dive into the construction company and the laborers that were working there.
Simply put, yes, we're still something that we work on every week. It's something that is certainly difficult because of the nature of that business and the nature of the information that we have. We've heard various accounts of what law enforcement was able to do as far as that goes, ranging from they were able to talk to everyone and track down everyone to the opposite of that, and they were unable to track down many of them. So I'm not sure where the truth lies on that part of it, but for us, it's something that we continue to look in and continue to try to track down. Have we been successful? We're still working on it, if that gives you a hint as to kind of the challenges that it's presented.
Heather asks on Facebook, I'm curious if anyone who lived in Jennifer's condo complex at the time of her disappearance were questioned about that night or the morning.
Yes, the people that were around at the time of Jennifer's disappearance were talked to by law enforcement. Exactly what they said, obviously we don't have access to the files to know that, but based on media reports, no one noticed anything out of the ordinary, and no one heard screams or anything of that nature. So the people that were able to be questioned didn't provide information that was helpful to our knowledge.
Natalie on Facebook wants to know about when Jen's picture was used on an online dating site for a catfishing scheme, and if we believe that has anything to do with this case.
Sadly, that's actually happened more than once. Jennifer's pictures have been used on various internet dating or escort websites. I don't think it has anything to do with her disappearance. I think it's just the case of people finding photos online of people that they can exploit to try to make money. Or in some cases, people just do things to victimize the families of victims, which I'll never understand. And unfortunately, the Kessies have endured more than their fair share of that over the years. It's certainly something that we don't like to see happen, but it's not something that at this time we think is connected to Jennifer's actual disappearance.
Here's a comment from Lori on Facebook, and it's something that a lot of people feel, and honestly, there's some days that we seem to feel this way too. I honestly think the police know or strongly suspect who did it and just don't have the evidence to prove it in court, Lori says. They're just waiting for someone to come forward or that last piece of evidence to cement the case.
If you remember a few episodes back, I think it was episode 9, at one point detectives were making statements that the case would soon be solved or resolved. And every law enforcement officer I've talked to said that those kind of statements wouldn't be made unless they had a strong suspect in mind. But then those same law enforcement officers go on to tell me that they don't understand how some of the things that have occurred or not occurred for that matter during this investigation have happened either. But it certainly makes you wonder. But then we realize that it's been a decade since those statements were made. And I don't know what to think. They had a suspect in mind and were just waiting for a slip-up or some additional information, but now, 10 years later, they're still waiting? We certainly know that law enforcement has more information than the rest of us, but does that mean that they have a suspect that they believe is responsible for Jennifer's disappearance? I don't know if after all this time, we can assume that, but as with anything in this investigation, it's certainly possible. That's going to wrap it up for today. Thanks as always for listening and for participating. Remember, if you think you may know something about the disappearance of Jennifer Kessie, it's not too late to speak up. The time is right now. Call the Orlando Police Department and ask to speak to the detectives in charge of this case. And if you don't want to talk to the police, then call the crime line. Call our voicemail line, call a lawyer, just call someone. It's time for Jennifer to come home. Before we go, we want to take a moment to thank our new supporters on Patreon.com, our friends at the Minds of Madness podcast, Amber and Christine. Thank you so much for helping make this podcast possible. If you're interested in supporting Unconcluded, you can check us out at unconcluded.com and click support. We also encourage you to join us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. All of those are at UnconcludedPod. Remember to subscribe to the podcast. We haven't asked for that in a while. And also, a 5-star rating and positive review on iTunes really helps the show grow and find more listeners. Music in this episode by Lee Rosevier. We'll see you next time.